Sharon Hamilton is a Shakespearean scholar and a mother, and she's written a study titled Shakespeare's Daughters. She explains the impetus for this book was a moving performance of Romeo and Juliet, and the actress playing Juliet was not a professional, but a high school student, heartbreakingly earnest and vulnerable. By then, I had daughters of my own, and as I listened to her eloquent voice, I found myself hoping hopelessly that Juliet would survive this time. Why should such a beautiful, gifted creature die so young? The answer came back clearly. Her parents do not love her as she needs to be loved. Her father gives her every worldly advantage, but he does not step out of his busy social whirl to try to understand her. Her mother is a moral cipher who submits to her husband and abandons her daughter when the girl opposes his rash commands. Juliet reacts by keeping her great crisis secret and trying to resolve it herself. I had recently taught The Tempest, and a vision of Miranda suddenly came to mind. She is about Juliet's age, but in totally different circumstances. Marooned, isolated, threatened by a monster, she would seem to be the daughter who is doomed. But her father, Prospero, understands her, loves her, and devotes his life to nurturing her, and Miranda flourishes. So the father is the key, I thought. Dave Reynolds is the chair of the theater department at King's College and production manager. He is a theater educator, designer, director, and he is a father. As he immersed himself in the next play he was to direct, he resonated with the themes of Shakespeare in The Tempest deeply. He worked on productions of The Tempest before, but what struck him as the ground base this time was the relationship between father and daughter. The King's College Theater Department will continue its 2025-2026 season with a production of The Tempest by William Shakespeare this weekend and next. Director Dave Reynolds and actor Noah McGinnis, who plays Caliban, stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about the tradition of Shakespeare at King's and this year's play, The Tempest.
This is our 76th Shakespeare production since 1951. We finally did the math. I used to say annual, but we missed 2 years in there. But yeah, this is 76 performances of Shakespeare since 1951. The college opened in 45, and so 6 years later was Julius Caesar. And it's been just about every season there's been a Shakespeare as part of the performance season. So the DNA of deep in the DNA of King's Theater, Shakespeare.
Of course, you have not just directorial chops, but you are a production designer and you are someone who does have wonderful vision of how that is not separate from the words or anything. It's all part of the conception. But there is magic in this play. And so you have a chance to work with sounds. People are hearing sounds and things like that. So sound effects and music. And
yeah, the design, it's a playground for designers, honestly. And we're very lucky to have some really talented designers on this one. We have a student set designer, Anthony Abbott. We have a student sound designer who actually not only just sound design, he assistant directed. His name's Matt Carr. He did the sound design, but he actually wrote original composition for this. He reworked our entire sound system so that now we can have, exactly like you're talking about, different sounds popping out from different places. And then John Voico is our lighting designer and Autumn Galka is our costume designer. So I don't know if I'd say it's the most magical Shakespeare that I've worked on. I mean, there's obviously magic in lots of his plays. There's supernatural things in lots of his plays. But this is, you know, Prospero is a magician, or as my daughter says, magician, who's also in it. My daughter's in it.
So that for you, as you were just explaining, has been a conceptual challenge and delight.
Oh, absolutely. When I was working on it, I had spent a lot of time, you know, reading it and then reading some of the thoughts about it and how like a lot of directors have really leaned into Caliban being the native person, right, of this island, and how so many takes on this have been about colonization and things like that. And so I was sort of into that idea. But then I just read it deeper, and not that that's not part of it, but what I really, really wanted to focus on was the relationship between Prospero and Miranda, the father-daughter relationship, and how he, it's the line from Into the Woods, where at the end, when the baker's wife has died and she comes back and he doesn't know what to do, and she says to him, be father and mother, you'll know what to do. So Prospero has to do that. He's on this island by himself with no other humans. And so that is where I really wanted to lean in. And then we sort of landed on this idea that I wanted the island to be magic itself. Not that Prospero was necessarily magical, but that he could, through his reading of the books, which is what they talk about, he's an autodidact, he's very self-taught, he reads everything that he can, that's why he loses his dukedom, that he can harness the power of this island, right? And so then I thought about where are places in this world, and I got very motivated with the idea of thin places, like the Gaelic notion of places on earth where the veil between the spiritual world and our world is thinner. And then I was Googling and sort of landed on the Orkney Islands in Scotland, which is a place where it is this sort of thin place idea. And it's got, it's like the Druids were there and very early, early civilization. So that's sort of where we landed with the island. And then things just sort of led from there as far as the magic, right? So Prospero was able to harness the power and magic of the island, but also like divorcing the fact that he's not a native, right? And that the only real native here is Caliban and then Ariel, which is the magical creature that does the bidding of Prospero, but only because he saved their life, right? And in this production, we have three actresses who are playing Ariel, and it's really kind of great. It's a very movement-based piece because Ariel can shapeshift, but the island by birthright belongs to Caliban. And we're very lucky to have Dr. Megan Lloyd, who's our Shakespeare professor. She stops by rehearsals, and she's been saying all along that she thinks the best poetry in this play goes to Caliban. So I brought Noah along because he's playing Caliban. And so I thought maybe if you would want to talk about how Caliban fits into this whole thing for people that might not know what this story is.
Well, Caliban is born on the island by Sycorax, who is a witch. There's a whole backstory with that she was cast out of wherever she was from and landed on this island before Prospero. So she kind of was the interloper onto this island before Prospero. But then she had a child on the island, and that was Caliban. And eventually Sycorax dies before the play starts, and Caliban has free reign of the island until Prospero and Miranda show up. And I think for me, the big thing that I've been really trying to figure out with him, because it's really hard, is that he never really has a relationship with another human being, because he's not a human being, but he like is a humanoid figure, and he doesn't really have interactions with other people other than Sycorax, who's now dead, Prospero and Miranda, who absolutely despise him, and eventually other characters who kind of try to use him because he looks different than them and because he behaves differently than they do. But the reason he behaves differently is because of the way he was brought up. He was brought up on this island with no other people around. He's this disgusting looking creature because his mother was a witch, and he can't control any of that, I don't think. And Shakespeare, I'm not 100% sure if this is the play that originates it, but Shakespeare uses the term like nature versus nurture. And I feel like that's such an important thing to this character. He's never really nurtured, I don't think. And so he kind of relies on his nature and what he has been brought into this world as. And so he's a very tragic character that I've had a lot of fun learning how to play.
And what do you do physically then to suggest that otherness?
Well, there's a lot of makeup involved. And then when I do it, I had a lot of trouble finding the physicality of him because he is supposed to be like this very monstrous figure. And it was either Dave or it was Jamil Powers, our acting coach and teacher, told me that I should look at animals to try to figure out the way he moves, specifically fish and water creatures, because he is said to be half fish, half man. So I looked, and the thing that I kind of settled on was the way crocodiles move. They have this very specific thing where they move both their arms and their legs at the same time. and in this very like rolling motion, which I've kind of tried to adapt. And then with the alligators too, like they also have this guttural sound that they make, which I started to layer into my voice when I do the voice for the character.
You're nodding, Dave, so it seems to be working.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a really interesting, Caliban is a very interesting character for lots of reasons. You know, Shakespeare was writing this at the time where the New World was happening, right? So that's why so many people bring up, people go to this foreign place and, oh, wait, there's already people here, kind of, right? And so a lot of people have leaned into that, Caliban being the native, the savage, you know. But I think what Noah's bringing to it is so much more than that. There's a really a depth. Because one of the things we talked about a lot is the nature-nurture thing. He was sort of unformed in some way. And then Prospero and Miranda taught him English and taught him to read and taught him all of these things. And then there's like a very blatantly inappropriate moment with he and Miranda where he makes advances that are unwanted. And so from that point forward, Prospero kicks him out of the house. But we've talked about, well, how would he know what's appropriate, right? So there's this tragedy to the character that he didn't know. I mean, he has a great line. It's one of Noah's favorite lines. Go, you can say it.
You taught me language and my prophet on does I know how to curse.
It's like he's throwing it back to them that like, you know, well, you didn't teach me what was right. And so I think there's a lot of depth and nuance that Noah is very, very well capturing of this character.
Let's work our way to Prospero. Let's talk about Miranda because she's an innocent too, isn't she?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're playing with the idea that we actually have added a prologue, that's where my daughter comes in, where you see Prospero and then the 8-year-old Miranda on the island. They meet Ariel, things like that. And then the storm happens and then Miranda and Prospero have a very long conversation, which is ostensibly lots of exposition, but it's interesting and fun exposition. Miranda has the only human that she's ever seen is her father, that she can remember. There's a little bit of like, what do you remember? We're going with that she was 3. When he was banished to the island. So she doesn't know much of humanity. All she knows is what her father has taught her, right? And her father has taught her very well, educated her on the classics because he was able to sneak books with him to the island. And so she's very smart, but she is innocent in that sense of, she has a great line, well, Brave New World, which has such creatures in it at the end of the play where she's seeing human beings. So she immediately falls in love with Ferdinand when she sees him, who ends up being the king's son. But it's all... we're playing very much that it's all kind of a plan that Prospero has laid out. So Prospero has laid out the plan to get these people here, you know, maybe in the beginning to revenge the fact that his brother stole his dukedom. But as the play continues, you learn that really what Prospero is trying to do is forgive everyone. He's a great line, which I'll paraphrase it, but basically there's more virtue in forgiveness than vengeance, you know. So he ends up forgiving everyone. But the whole thing kind of has been that he wants his daughter to have happiness. We're playing the idea of the melancholy. He's got all this power and this wonderful speech where he's ye elves of brooks and he's the magic. He's controlling the lights and the sound. And then it's over and it stops. And he says, this rough magic I'll here abjure, because he knows that for her to be happy, he has to go back to regular life. But there's a hint of melancholy because I think he'd be perfectly happy with this hermetic life that he has on this island. But he knows he has to do it for his daughter to move forward. So that's kind of the relationship we're playing with Prospero and Miranda. So that actually leaves Caliban with the island at the end.
Speaking of Prospero now, is this the worldview of someone who has gained wisdom through life and the slings and arrows and has come to understand that forgiveness?
I think so. For me, conceptually, the forgiveness is a huge part of it. Another huge part of it, which is something I'm working on personally, is for Prospero, so much of it is about letting his kids grow up. So our Revels Now Are Ended is directed to Miranda. Our time here, this wonderful time that we had on this island, is finished now because I need to let you grow up. So it's not just about the redemption. That's a huge part of it. I think that's his final lesson on the island that he's teaching Miranda, is that you should forgive. But for him, the melancholy is he would live in this world with his daughter, you know, and the last image, I don't want to give things away, but one of the last images he sees is he looks back and he sees my daughter Rosie as a memory. So it's that he's leaving this behind. So he's letting her grow up. And there's a melancholy to that, but there's also a hope to that, I think.
And there are commentators who spend time making the comparison between Prospero and Shakespeare himself.
Yes, absolutely. We've dug into that quite a bit. This was one of the last plays that he wrote by himself. There's a lot of scholarship there too, that some of the later plays, you know, there's more than one author voice, but they feel like this might be one of the last ones that he wrote himself. And so when you think about that, we've talked a lot about like, well, did he know that? Did he know this? Did he actually write Our Revels Now Are Ended knowing it was one of the last things he was ever going to write? And who knows? But if he did, then Prospero is speaking Shakespeare's mind, which is really pretty interesting. That in the epilogue as well, where, you know, he's like, you know, release me from, he's asking to be released, which is kind of a crazy way to think about it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know the scholarship, but maybe you've looked into that, whether or not he knew this was going to be one of his last pieces, but it does have a finality. It has a swan song kind of quality to it with the words that Prospero has towards the end of the play.
I think it's so interesting. Dr. Lloyd mentioned that in Our Revels Now Are Ended, he talks about the globe, and it is talking about the world, and the way he talks about it is talking about the world, but it also is talking about the theater, the globe, and there is a line about like the stars or something, and there were stars painted on the ceiling of the globe. So I think it very much could be like his swan song, because he is kind of addressing the world that he's learned how to give his voice to, and now he's going to stop giving his voice to it, which, whether he knew it or not, I think it's just fascinating that there was that line that's added in there.
And you have an actor playing Prospero who has been with you here, and he is quite a mature actor.
Yes.
What is he bringing to the character?
Oh, so very much. John Toussaint is playing Prospero, who was parolees last year, and his Shakespeare debut for me the year before that was Antony and Antony and Cleopatra. He minds the text in a really great way, in a very mature way for an actor, as does Noah. But they bring different things, which is kind of neat. But John will, I mean, we do part of the rehearsal process. It's very pedantic. You know, we do the scansion and we do the things that maybe you hated in your English class, where it's stressed, unstressed, and like breaking it down. And you do all this work on the text so that you can forget it, right? Because then you need to make it feel real. And I think our whole cast is doing a really good job with that. John brings, what I'm really loving about what he's bringing to Prospero is, I actually said in my notes last night that I love seeing the fun side of Prospero. I think Prospero can be, you know, it's big, bombastic. You know, Brother Jim played him years ago. I didn't see it, but we have a picture of Brother Jim as Prospero hanging in the shop, and he's just larger than life. And I'm sure he was great, although I have heard he couldn't remember his lines, but bro wouldn't mind. But John, because we're going so much with this father-daughter relationship, that's really come, there's a lot of playfulness with Miranda and him, which I'm really loving. And that's something that I think doesn't jump out right when you're reading it. I think that's something that an actor and a scene partner, both Greta, who's playing Miranda, and he, their chemistry is really great. And so that's really making it work for me.
We always like to say Shakespeare speaks to us in every age. And you used the word revenge, and we know there was political intrigue, and there was overthrowing and thirst for power. Those sound like concepts that could be
sure
talked about today.
Ripped from the headlines, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's all there, right? And I think that's why we're still doing his plays 450, 500 years later, because it encapsulates the human condition. And yes, like, we do have to get through the exposition about the Court of Naples and all those things, right? And, you know, it'll be a challenge. High school students will follow that. But when you cut down to it, it's about timeless human things. Revenge and being thirsty for power and political intrigue. And at the end of the play, you know, he forgives everyone. He forgives his brother. He's the big brother. There's a little bit of like noogies and stuff there, right? Because we do try to make it fun. That's something about this play that I think is really kind of great, because the last Shakespeare that I directed, the next comedy, was Twelfth Night. And it's just all goofy, right? It's all sort of fun. And there's some real, I think, insightful, melancholy stuff in this one. But there's also tons and tons of fun stuff. There's Trinculo and Stefano, which we have Jamil, our acting professor, and then AJ Bonk, who's my assistant technical director and resident designer. They're playing those parts. So they have tons of scenes with Noah, and it's just pure comedic joy, right? So I think Shakespeare knows he's peppering in all this exposition and all this intrigue and all this stuff, but then he's going to slide in, let's have the scene with the drunks, right? Because that's going to make everybody happy.
Let me just ask you, Noah, about the resonance for us today as we encounter and experience The Tempest. What about the notion of forgiveness, so important for us today?
Yeah, I think there's a point at the end where Prospero chooses to forgive his brother, and he says this line about, "You, my brother, who to even call my brother infects my tongue," but then immediately follows that with, "I do forgive thy rankest fault." And so I think, to me, that's something that's missing today, is this idea that you can forgive someone and still acknowledge the things that they've done, but still be willing to work with them and still be willing to have something there, like an olive branch of, hey, you messed up, I messed up, let's work together to make a better future, which I think is a really important message today. And to end that sort of cycle of revenge is something that's, I think, really powerful, especially with Caliban. He does this horrible thing at the beginning, or you hear about it at the beginning. And then throughout the play, he's horribly mistreated by Prospero because of this horrible thing that he did, which then causes him to go on a spree of revenge, trying to use other characters to get back at Prospero, which makes those characters upset and out for revenge for different things. And it just becomes this very angry, Caliban becomes a very angry person, which he is at the beginning, but by the end, it's just, we added in a moment near the end with Caliban, and he's just completely broken. And we get to see that, which I don't know that that's usually done, but you get to see that Caliban is just fully done and broken. And then at the end, Prospero does forgive him like he forgives everyone else. And there's a moment of maybe the cycle is going to stop. And I think that that is something that a lot of people need to see.
Yeah, I would say it's just, you know, I think Noah really captured it. It's a timeless tale. And I think exactly what he said is that people need to hear that you can forgive. You can forgive. You might not forget, but you can forgive and you can move forward. And I think it's also just, it's a very fun piece. It's a very, like you said, it's full of magic. It's full of whimsy. It's full of things that still really work today for a modern audience. So I hope that people would like, if you're scared of Shakespeare, this would be one to not be scared of. Come see it. You'll find things that you never would have expected to find in a 500-year-old play.
Yeah. Where and when, Dave?
So it's in the George P. Maffei II Theater. We run through the 15th at 7:30. We have a matinee on Sunday the 16th at 2, and then we run the following Thursday and Friday the 20th and 21st at 7:30. And you can get tickets just by going to, if you go to kings.edu and search for theater, you can go there. Or if you Google On the Stage, King's College Theater, you can get tickets there as well.
Are you using the Shakespeare thrust stage?
Ooh, we are not actually. We're using some of it. It is a thrust. The seating is in thrust style. But there's two ramps on either side, and then there's sort of like a big rock at the bottom of one of the ramps, and then the middle of the ramp is the cave where he hangs out. So it's an adapted thrust, but it's not the thrust. And that thrust, it's a special thing because it's modeled on the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis and the Stratford Festival. And we love the fact that our students get to perform on a stage like this, because it's not something that you get most places. The three-quarter seating, it's so much more. I would say I have more asides to the audience in this show than I've had in a long, long time. Trinculo and Stefano and Caliban, the first scene, is a scene with the audience. We've sort of directed it that the audience is a character that they interact with. So that's the kind of stuff that you can, that doesn't work on a proscenium stage. It works when you're standing right next to them.
Dave Reynolds, chair of the theater department at King's College in Wilkes-Barre and production manager, and he is the director of the current production of The Tempest. And he and actor Noah McGinnis, who plays Caliban, stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about The Tempest that opened last night and will run this weekend and next at the George P. Maffei II Theater, and that's in the Physical Science Center, 133 North River Street in Wilkes-Barre. There will be shows at 7:30 p.m., the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and the 20th and 21st. And then there will be a matinee this Sunday, November 16th at 2. Again, the performances will take place in the Maffei Theater in the Physical Science Center, 133 North River Street in Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, kings.edu. You're able to purchase tickets in advance, or they will be available at the theater box office just before the performance. For more information, kings.edu.